This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
Welcome to the Evolution Garden. We're starting this tour in the top corner of the garden. Having entered through the entrance on Exhibition Road, from here, we're overlooking the garden that stretches ahead of us and down to the right. We recommend moving slightly forward along the wide, sloping path to listen to this track. Paul Kenrick, a principal researcher here at the Natural History Museum, tells us more about this garden.
The Evolution Garden is about giving our visitors an understanding of the length of geological time and also the scale of change that has gone on in the past. So what we're doing is we're asking our visitors to walk through the Phanerozoic Eon, which is like the last 540 million years of Earth history. And we're scaling the various geological periods to that.
I'm Toby Davey, and that was a clip from the audio guide to the recently opened Evolution and Nature Discovery Gardens at the Natural History Museum in London, which launched during a special event for invited guests on Tuesday, the 6th of August 2024. Included within the guide are a number of poems created by a group of young visually impaired people, which came out of a series of workshops led by rapper and poet Testament. Prior to attending the launch event for the new audio guide to the Natural History Museum's Evolution and Nature Discovery Gardens, I caught up with Harriet Fink, Learning and Volunteering Programme Manager at the Natural History Museum, to find out a bit more about the two new amazing gardens and how the workshops with the young visually impaired people led by Testament had gone. I began by asking Harriet to give me an overview of the two amazing gardens which have really transformed the 5 acres of green spaces that wrap around the much-loved Natural History Museum building in London.
So they opened on the 18th of July this year, so they really are new and they have totally transformed the space, as you said. The space is now 2 immersive outdoor galleries. So there's the Evolution Garden, the Nature Discovery Garden, and they're an opportunity for people to explore 2.7 billion years of our planet's history, as well as to connect with the nature that's on our doorsteps now in towns and cities. So we hope that our visitors get lost in nature. It's a wildlife haven for all to enjoy and explore. And we hope that they get lost or to discover the story of our planet. So the gardens start from pre-life Earth with a canyon of rocks, and they're structured, the canyon structured in a way that shows how the rock beds got laid down and changed over time. And it goes through as life developed on our planet, with the age of the dinosaurs represented by an amazing large bronze diplodocus, or life-size bronze diplodocus. And then you've got the arrival of humans, and then we're looking at what we can do to safeguard nature in the world in which we inhabit currently. We know that there's a twin crisis, biodiversity and climate emergency, and we're looking at how we can best respond to these in a changing planet. Our gardens are going to be one of the most intensively studied urban nature sites globally. We've got an amazing opportunity with our scientists on the doorstep of the gardens, and that gives us a way to look at how we can be part of the national biodiversity movement to safeguard nature.
And how will both gardens be brought to life through the recorded audio guide, along with the poems that were created through the workshops with Testament and the young blind and partially sighted people? How will that help to bring the gardens to life for blind and partially sighted people?
So the guides tell the stories of the gardens, be they from how life interacted with each other in its early stages to how it interacts now. It provides a rich, creative, informative experience for listeners that gives them the depth of evolutionary time, the way in which life's evolved on our planet, and the thriving diversity of life that you can find in the city now. And it also enables people to understand the ways in which we're using our garden to study this biodiversity and how they can help to protect and enhance it. The poetry gives an additional creative, reflective moment for people to sit and respond and soak up those stories in the space.
And what sort of comments and feedback did you have from the young blind and partially sighted people who worked with Testament on the poems that are included in the audio guide? And what do you think both Testament and the Natural History Museum have gained from, I suppose, working with the young visually impaired people?
It was such a fantastic experience and set of workshops. Each of the young people brought their own amazing richness of experience themselves. They were all had very different starting interests, from science to writing to gaming and interaction and rap. So the diversity of thought and the way that that interplayed with the creative exercises led by Testament and the objects and scientists interviews and interactions that we had through the workshop meant that we've got this really beautifully resonant and deep set of poems that Testament then shaped together. The whole process was very iterative, so responded to what content we'd heard from scientists, to our exploration of the objects. We drew out language from touching various rocks or different fossils and really exploring them. How would you respond to that fossil if it was a person? What sort of emotion do you get from the soil? And a really kind of unusual way to get this kind of palette of language. But it meant that we had such a rich palette of language from their understanding of those objects, their interaction, their previous experience. And all of that meant that as a team, we were able to really learn together about what would work for creating the poems, what would work for bringing an object to life and a story to life.
And I suppose, you know, sort of it's great that the guide's there, but also it's great for young, blind and partially sighted people. And I suppose that's all to play our part in focusing on the sort of changing nature that is all around us in, you know, sort of urban development and everything else. So it's so good for us all to play our part.
The challenge is large and takes all voices and all perceptions of how to take action. But also it's overwhelming and people need to prioritise their well-being and their present in it. And nature is one of the ways that we know that's really good for looking after our well-being. So, yeah, I hope the guide provides both a sort of intellectual understanding of the challenge and potential ways of addressing, but also is an enjoyable experience and a moment to reflect and take time in nature and regather your own connection with nature and your own energy and balance through being outside.
And now that the Nature Discovery and Evolution Gardens are open, along with the availability of a recorded audio guide, Harriet, where can listeners go to find out more about the gardens, along with details of where to find and pick up the recorded audio guide?
So the guide's available on our website, nhm.ac.uk, and it's hosted on our gardens page and our access page. The audio guide plays through SoundCloud, so it can be downloaded using Wi-Fi in advance of your visit. It's over 30 tracks, so it's over 2 hours long, which means that you might want to look and in advance decide what tracks you're going to follow and what curate your own journey or come back and follow a different journey each time.
I think people probably have to come back a few times to experience everything. But thank you very much indeed, Harriet, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about the new gardens at the Natural History Museum and the recorded audio guide.
Thank you so much for having me on and also for all your help in recruiting participants.
We're now in Fern's Garden. Fern being the name given to the Diplodocus here by local school children. The skeleton cast is on a kind of island that the two main pathways of the garden encircle in a loose oval shape. The skeleton itself is huge, easily the length and height of a double-decker bus. It's cast in bronze, which means it's a striking, reflective golden colour. Its head is at our end of the garden island, with its curling tail at the far end, in the direction we'll be continuing soon. The space is designed to represent a Jurassic landscape. It's covered in a light grey gravel, and in amongst this are various rocks and plants. On the far side of the island are a collection of medium-sized deep red stones, which look incredibly rich against the lighter gravel. There are larger, paler rocks in the middle. Lush green ferns and larger, spiky bushes are dotted around the space too.
Part of the introduction to Ferns Garden there from the audio guide. At the launch event in Ferns Garden at the Natural History Museum, I chatted with some of the people who were involved in the creation of the audio guide, beginning with three of the young visually impaired people who took part in the workshops led by rapper and poet Testament to create their well-crafted and written poems that feature in the guide, which helped to bring the themes and nature of the gardens to life for everyone.
Hi, hello, I'm Anna, and I'm one of the writers that helped create this amazing audio guide.
Hello, my name is Precious, and I'm also one of the writers that helped create the audio guide.
Hi, I'm Eliza, and I'm also one of the co-creators for the audio guide.
So how did you all find it working with Testament, working on the poems and doing the workshops? What was that all like?
I found it personally amazing. Testament is so talented and encouraging and engaging. He embraced all of our ideas and really got us to connect and to engage with the objects that we were tactilely introduced to.
It was a real privilege to be able to be part of creating audio guides with Testament, who again is so talented. And also it was nice being part of the process of making sure that museums are accessible, because in my experiences accessibility hasn't been great, so it's sort of using your own experiences to hopefully help others to have a more positive experience than perhaps I would have had.
And I think one of my main things to say really is that I found it was a really, really inclusive experience. Testament was great at, like Precious said, he embraced all of our opinions, and he was really good at guiding us through the writing process, so at any point we could discuss anything we wanted with him, and it felt like a very, very inclusive experience, no matter if we were sighted or not. Overall, it felt really comfortable and really inclusive.
And what was it like sort of creating the poems? What sort of, I suppose, input did you all have?
I was actually surprised at how much input we were allowed to have. Collectively, we all pretty much wrote every idea that's in the poem, and sometimes we all shouted it out, and other times we would have quick writing tasks and little bits would be magpied from each poem.
I think we, again, as Precious and Anna have said, we were all engaged in every part of the process. It wasn't, you know, oh no, this idea is not good, or you're not going to do this bit. It's, you know, merging all of our ideas into making something very magical, metaphorical, and just engaging to listen to.
And what do you feel like actually sort of now having the poems sort of written and recorded and listening to them? How does that make you feel?
It feels very gratifying, and actually it's quite, you know, because all of us have some varying levels of visual impairment, you know, it feels very gratifying to actually, like we said before, have input into something that is going to be used by both partially sighted and sighted people alike, and know that actually, yes, we made it, we were part of it, and we know that this is going to work.
I thought it was amazing to be able to hear some of the poems come to life. As someone with sighted siblings, I've dealt with the feeling of having to use a resource like an audio guide, and it can feel a bit isolating and marginalising. But because of how this audio guide has been constructed, everyone can use it and everyone's encouraged to use it, and that is so inclusive and embracing and amazing. And it's the type of resource that if I was with my little sister, she'd be jealous. And she's like, I want to use that. And I love that.
I have to agree with both what Anna and Precious have said. You know, it's kind of like emotional knowing that all that writing and brainstorming that we've done, we've been able to record that. And now that other people have exposure to that, it just, you know, it just feels good.
And I suppose, you know, sort of having done the writing and having worked on the poems, will you all probably maybe get into a bit of writing in the future, creative writing?
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons why I thought it would be a good idea to get stuck into this workshop in the first place, because, well, I love talking, therefore I love writing. And writing is always a lot of fun because, again, you can have so much fun with words, and words do a lot, and especially when you can incorporate your senses into what you're writing, it helps so much. So absolutely.
It's personally really, really encouraged me to think about creative writing. I think that for me, reading text and accessing text has always been something that's really hard. And being in this amazing environment where I could access text and think about text, I've now seen that this is something that I love doing, first of all, and something that I can do.
For me, I think it's somebody who's studying English and creative writing at university, this is something where I can use those skills, and, you know, through doing that, I've been able to create these poems. And again, it's just another experience for me to add to, you know, my CV.
And it's fantastic that people can come down here and listen to all your poems, and that's wonderful. And thank you all very much indeed for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sometimes a moment can last a long time. Sometimes a long time lasts a moment. Every minute, second, hour, or day, something changes. The one thing I really wanted to feel is the one I didn't get to feel. I just wanted to enjoy the water, the vibe, the ocean. A fallen tree, fossilized in a few days. A moment. A thousand. 350 million years, and then humans, and pollution, and trawlers, and single-use plastics, unimaginable marks of destruction in their wake. All while I was just trying to say, it is beautiful here. Before it's not living anymore. We are the blueprint of your actions. Use the time wisely. Fossil found.
That was the poem for Fossil, read by Precious. After chatting with Precious, Anna and Aliza, I caught up with rapper and poet Testament to find out firstly about his approach to the workshops with the young visually impaired people.
Yeah, well, I guess I kind of, I'm a poet, so my mum always said poetry should always include the senses. Actually, that's even more sort of relevant to sort of blind and partially sighted people because of blind gain and so forth. You know, there's actually insights into the world which sighted people don't have, and in terms of a poet, that's actually a really good, big advantage. So even the range of young people we had went from like 16 years old up to 21. And some of them had never written poetry before and certainly didn't consider themselves poets. Some of them chose to be there. Some were forced to be there by their mum. And not the ones you'd necessarily expect either. But it was really exciting. So I think the way the workshops were structured, we sort of had these mini lectures from these world-leading experts on all the different exhibits in the gardens. And we got to touch and handle the different specimens, whether that's a skull of an animal or insects or the oldest rock in Britain, and sort of respond to that. And I think what was extraordinary for me about it was you got all this amazing, inspiring information from scientists that, you know, the average person doesn't know. I certainly didn't. That was mega inspiring. But actually the young people themselves engaged. And they did what great poetry does, which isn't just describe something sort of mechanically, but actually gives us the reasons why these things are important and what they mean to us, and even some inspirational messages about life as well. We were lucky enough to have Vicky Ackroyd, who was sort of, I guess, our accessibility worker. So some of that could be really basic stuff, like getting someone from the tube down to the basement of the museum where we were doing the workshops. And some of it was actually helping me as a creative go, you know what, actually in the planning session, rather than do this, well, actually let's do something where we can get more sensory sort of stimuli involved, and it's less boring as well, to be honest. So that was great.
And I suppose for you as somebody, you know, sort of who may not have worked with visually impaired people before, Did you sort of change the way you worked in any way? And I suppose, what sort of things did you learn from the young visually impaired people?
Well, I have worked with visually impaired people a few times. It's one of the reasons I got the gig. But I would not say I'm, you know, mad experience with it, working with people with different needs. I've just done loads of random stuff in my life, basically. In terms of how... Actually, the biggest thing is these are young people. And actually, that supersedes, you know, visual impairment. Actually, the bigger needs are you engaging a young person? Because this could be really stale and boring. We're going to look at some rocks for the afternoon. Do you know what I mean? It could be the most dry thing ever. And actually, that was sort of the thing that I really focused on. Because in terms of accessibility and so forth, actually, most of these young people, these are 16 up, so they've already developed mechanisms and means and ways of getting around the busiest city, London, in the world, you know. So that was kind of calm, actually. But the insights on, in terms of in between the sessions, and some of it came out, you'll hear little bits of it sort of in the background of the work, actually is about, there's some prejudice and discrimination, which is a young person who is finding your identity and getting out in the world to face discrimination because of your disability. That can be really frustrating and can be damn right unjust, quite frankly, some of the things that we spoke about. And that finds its way into the poetry as well, and needing these green spaces, needing nature as places to refuel and reconnect and re-inspire and centre oneself and find strength to go back out into the world.
I suppose the good thing is that having the poems in the audio guide and having the young blind and partially sighted people involved, you're engaging with a younger audience, and the younger audience are probably maybe more aware of our environment, our nature, and how we have to protect it and look after it compared to maybe somebody my age.
Yeah, in terms of the big story, yes, but also sometimes they've been told so many horror stories, oh, the world is going to end, it can kind of disempower young people, and they think, oh, what's the point? You know, I'll just get on and do the fun stuff and not actually think about, you know, is anything going to change? But one of the empowering things that I found about the young people was that actually they wanted to change the world where they were at. Some of those young people are already advocates for blind people and are already making changes where they're at, whether it's using art or going into medicine, loads of different ways that they're engaging with the world. And actually, something that certainly city dwellers don't often think about is the natural world. So there was an opportunity for all of us, wherever our background from and whatever our sort of ability, to be able to sort of think about the importance of nature and looking after that natural world for us as humans.
Yeah, and I also think, I mean, this is a great opportunity for young people to develop their writing skills. And I think from the sound of it, from listening to a couple of the poems, I mean, I don't know how much input you had to give them, but they certainly sounded really good.
Yeah, that's the surprising thing. When I work with people, period, even people that count themselves out as writers, actually, my job really is just to use games, exercises, tricks, stimuli to draw the creativity out of us, because actually we're creating all the time. Every time we open our mouth, every time we make a decision, we're creating, and it's just sort of giving people the tools to be able to express themselves. And that's all we did, because I think one of the writers is a very experienced creative writer. Others, literally, they don't consider themselves writers at all. So it's just giving people tools. And when you give people tools and a bit of time and a little provocation, actually, it's really surprising. People surprise themselves with the genius they come out with sometimes.
And it's great to have the audio guide for people to come and explore the gardens here and interact and come back again, because they're quite long, the guides, but that's good because there's a lot here to experience and explore.
Yeah, I mean, this garden is beautiful and a little oasis in the city, and I really hope people will come. And yes, you've got all this content, and exactly as you say, come and have a cup of tea, repeated listens, and then might find yourself venturing into the building as well. But actually, just the outside space, I could definitely chill here with a cup of tea for many hours.
Well, Testament, thank you very much indeed for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Absolute honour.
Finally, at the launch event, I caught up with Professor Hannah Thompson from Royal Holloway University of London, who is partially blind, to find out about her involvement as specialist advisor for the audio guide.
Hi, Toby. So as a partially blind person, I spend a lot of time listening to audio guides, and I'm also interested in them from an academic point of view. I'm interested in audio description as a kind of translation. and also in the possibilities of creative audio description and the theory of blindness gain, which is basically the idea that things that are initially made for blind people can actually benefit everyone. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of benefit in blindness, the underappreciated benefit in blindness. And so in terms of the guide, I was basically just kind of advising on kind of different ways of thinking about the content, ways of thinking about the garden in a more creative way. And then I did some of the walk arounds and the kind of actual practical stuff with the team as well. It's really important that whenever there's something which is made for blind people, it's made by blind people. So I was kind of part of that as well.
And it's great to have the young blind and partially sighted people who worked with Testament on the poems, which are included in the guide too. And also, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, we go to museums and galleries and we get a described guide that's specially for blind and partially sighted people, and then we get one that's for the general public. And it's, you know, it's much better to have it all integrated, yeah, as you say.
Absolutely, because actually what you don't realise is that a lot of people who wouldn't use a bespoke guide for blind people are actually going to benefit and enjoy massively this kind of audio content. And so when it's kind of, when description is seamlessly woven into kind of creative content and also kind of directional content, it just makes a much fuller experience that everyone's going to appreciate. And I don't really like it when there's a kind of a segregated guide, because you can't just put people into one category or the other. This way, you can go to the garden with your family or with your friends and everyone can listen to the same thing. So you're not kind of excluded, you're not in a little bubble. And it's actually kind of blindness led, which I think makes quite an important political point about the value of non-normativity, if you like, the value of difference.
And also, there's quite a lot to explore here, and the guide, there's lots of different tracks and you can come and come back again and stuff and things like that. How did sort of, I suppose, the orientation work on the guide on getting somebody from one place to another?
I mean, it's quite complicated because you can visit the gardens in different ways. There isn't like a kind of one route round the garden. So some of it is description of, you know, how to get from A to B. But a lot of it is kind of assuming that you are visiting several times, that you, even that you might be listening to the guide before you visit. So you kind of get a sense of the layout and the various different elements. And then when you're here, we tried to include things like changes of texture, because there's lots of different surfaces that they've used, which you can feel with your feet or your cane, or like when there's sound as well. So like how near or far you are from the main road, for example, and which direction you might be facing. Because when I was here, I was really struck by what the garden sounds like. Well, not just the garden, but what the space sounds like. So the fact that you've got this huge building on one side, which muffles one side, and then you've got a massive road on the other side. And no one else had noticed that, because, you know, they were thinking about other things. And so I said, you know, let's mention a bit of that. And then just generally, it's going to be quite a busy space. So, you know, I kind of thought, well, if you're listening and you can't work out the relationship between you and the space, then maybe asking someone is quite a good way of getting into a conversation, and, you know, and then telling the person you've asked about the guide as well, and maybe getting them to listen to it with you, because a lot of people just won't even occur to them to use this kind of content unless they're kind of prompted.
And I think it is that thing of sometimes when you come to a place and there's other people around and it's nice to interact with other people and, you know, sort of ask people for help, which is something that for me as a blind person, which I wasn't quite that good at in my youth, but I got a lot better when I get older, and I do ask people for assistance. And I think it's, as you say, it's great to share that experience.
But I also think quite often people are a bit like, they really want to help, but they don't necessarily know how to offer. They don't want to like offend you or make assumptions. So I tend to also ask rather than wait for someone to offer, because I can kind of feel that you know, I don't want to like, just I want to make it easy for them. And we've got all these ironically visual markers like our canes and our dogs and whatever. And so people can, we're very visible, but even being visible, people don't necessarily ask. So I feel like one of the points of this garden is that it's a really social space. There's a lot of seating. There's a lot of like little nooks and crannies that you can kind of explore, and hopefully people will come here kind of in their lunch break or just as a break from the museum. And so having the guide as like a talking point, I think, will be really nice. There's also loads of little tactile bits that they've put in as well, which some we mentioned and others we kind of just wanted people to find, because they're kind of like hidden a little bit, like some of the insects and animals that might use the garden.
And I suppose this is a great example to show to other museums and galleries of how an audio guide that's for everybody can be made accessible to blind and partially sighted people.
Exactly. I mean, that's kind of my dream, is that every audio guide is accessible to everyone. You know, museums spend a lot of time and effort on producing audio guides for their non-blind visitors in, you know, thousands of different languages. It would be amazing if that content, just with a few tweaks and a little bit of imagination and a bit of creativity and a bit of community work, became accessible for everyone.
Well, do come down here to the Natural History Museum in central London and explore the new gardens through the audio guide. Hannah, thank you so much indeed for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me, Toby. It was a pleasure.
As Hannah says, you might like to share the experience of exploring the new Evolution and Nature Discovery Gardens through the audio guide with a sighted friend or family member who might also be able to help a bit with navigating the 5 acres of gardens too. The recorded tracks of the audio guide to the Evolution and Nature Discovery Gardens, along with details of how to contact the Natural History Museum's access team, can be found by visiting nhm.ac.uk/visit/galleries-and-museum-map/r-gardens/audio-guides-and-transcripts. It might be easier to use your internet browser and search for Natural History Museum New Gardens Audio Guide.